You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, you're listening to Cattails, and I'm Cat. Badfinger is a band that has had more than its fair share of drama and tragedy over the years, to say the least. With a history that's more suited to a Tarantino film, Badfinger has been dogged with lawsuits and suicides, but has risen from the ashes with its latest incarnation, led by long-term band member Bob Jackson. I haven't met Bob in person, but we've been friends on social media for many years, so I was delighted to finally get to hear his tale about how he's been influenced by the Beatles and David Bowie, how he didn't expect his musical career to go beyond the age of 26, and how Badfinger managed to break bad. This is the one with Bob Jackson.
How are you, by the way?
Well, do you know, I'm not too bad. I mean, it's all very strange at the moment, isn't it? So things are all a bit
very
sort of topsy-turvy, but, you know, otherwise I'm okay. Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. And what about you? How's your health?
Yeah, well, I've had some bad health for quite a while now, and that was central to my leaving the Fortunes. The good news is that after a considerably long road, I'm pretty good now.
Good.
But of course, just as I got was getting better about 6 months ago, COVID kicked in. You couldn't write it, you know.
I know.
So, you know, we've all been under a terrible weight since then. But generally, I'm pretty good, yeah.
You're just sitting there waiting for the B of the bang again.
Indeed, yeah.
Because that's such a shame for so many people. Like yourself, have got new music there, and you have, you know, dates all booked in for your live events, and then suddenly it's been like, oh, you can't do this. It's almost, as you say, you couldn't write it, could you?
Well, yeah, and it's left the world in a terrible position, COVID, but in particular, I think the arts, you know, culture, music in particular, it's in a really bad place because the business has changed so much over the years. And really, the live scene is really the bread and butter, you know, for musicians. Now, it didn't used to be. I mean, it was always a sort of mainstay, but there was always that hope years ago in the old music business, if you want, where you thought, do you know, I might just get a hit record, I might just have some success, I might sell a few albums and singles, and that used to be pretty good form of income for creatives who wrote, you know. But of course it's all changed now, so people are downloading stuff, so the musician makes virtually nothing, 0.0000 whatever it is per play. So really the only way to earn a living is to be a live player.
Yeah.
And when that's taken away, where does that leave music?
Oh, I know.
And further, I would just say, it's not just the musicians, of course, it's the infrastructure behind the business. You know, the music shops, the venues, the lighting and sound, etc., etc. So I think what I'm most anxious about now is that if the infrastructure goes, who is it then? How long is it going to take? Who is it then after the infrastructure is dead who's going to say, I've got a good idea, I think I'll invest a lot of money in a music club or something? I don't think on a business level people will want to do it, you know?
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, it's almost...
So it is a bit... I'm sorry to start in a gloomy way, but I think you have to be realistic and realise what the situation is, you know?
I know, and everybody's saying the same things. I mean, there's so much, there's so many issues out there for the music business, isn't there? And as you say, it's not just the performers, it's everybody behind that, and it is a business, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Of course, if you want to... I mean, music is a wonderful thing in itself. It's always been a great friend to me and many, you know. It's a wonderful... it's good for the spirit, whether you do it professionally or not. But if you are trying to make a business of it, if you're trying to live from it, it's at the moment, it's impossible, you know.
Yeah.
It's absolutely impossible. Do you know, I read a poll from the MU this month, and it said that 70% of musicians now are seriously considering getting some other form of work in future because the music business isn't to be relied on.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty sad, really, but nevertheless, that's the fact, you know.
It is, and it's hitting all the arts, isn't it? And, you know, without having something for the soul, life becomes quite useless, doesn't it? Worthless in a way. So not to have art and music and everything that makes you feel good, you're missing out on half of life, surely.
Well, I think you're missing out on most of life, because culture in general, and as you say, it isn't just music, it's everything to do with any artistic endeavor. So the cinema, the theater, you know, all kinds of things that people enjoy, the cultural backbone really of any nation. If you take that away, you're taking the soul and the heart of the country away, you know. So I think it's really bad. It's not just I see it deeper than just a superficial, well, you know, if that business doesn't work, why not do another business, you know. It's deeper than that. The music and cinema and so on and so forth are it's the place that people can go. You know, the ordinary person can go and be entertained after they've worked hard all the week.
Yeah.
Well, if you've not got that to look forward to, what do, you know?
Yeah, and
other than maybe read a book, you know, but that's about it, really.
And especially in a time now where everybody is becoming far more aware of mental health and the issues around not having good well-being, it's needed more now than ever, surely.
Well, I agree with that as well. I'm a great proponent and have been for many, many years, that you know, people's mental health is so, so important to the country, you know, in all kinds of ways. And it has been overlooked for years. I think it's getting I think the whole movement of recognising mental problems has, you know, it has, you know, been recognised now more greatly than ever before.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, I agree with you. It can't be good in all kinds of ways. No, it's not good for the spirit of the soul of the country, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. And I think you made an interesting observation there about the actual, almost like the identity of a country, isn't it? It's almost like in the national fabric of a nation, and a country is to, you know, part and parcel of the way that they entertain and they produce music and they produce art and they, you know, they express themselves. Is, you know, cut it off. It's almost like forget who you are, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think without art is the thing that, how can I put it? It's what makes us human. The creation, making things, and I don't just mean making music, of course, but creating things in general, that's humanity. You know, the rest of it is being, you know, almost like a robot and doing things because you have to do them. But your culture and art is so, so important. You know, as I said before, to me, it's the soul of the world, you know. Can you imagine a world without any kind of culture or art in it? I mean, that's terrible, you know.
Isn't it? Sounds so grey, doesn't it? You know,
and it does.
And we're in danger of going in that area, aren't we? But let's hope there is a solution found somehow to get us all through this. And, you know, before it's too late, I think, for industries like, you know, like the music business. You know, let's hope.
Yeah. I was going to say, sorry to...
No, feel free.
I've sort of been, you know, sort of erring on the negative side, perhaps. But I do think it will get, you know, art will come back because people need it. But it will take time. And that's the thing. I think at the beginning of this pandemic thing, people were thinking, well, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe a month. But I think now we're in a position, it's gone on so long, for whatever reason. It's gone on and on and on. And I think it will take some time. I think it will all right itself. I think the world will, you know, I'm optimistic in that regard. I think things will get better. But I think we have to be realistic and know that it will take a while.
Yeah, and it may take a little bit of creative thinking, won't it? Which, let's be honest, the music industry, the arts and entertainment is all about creativity. Perhaps we need to put that creativity into a different way and just a different form and try and think about how can we still produce music, how can we still entertain and still make a living out of it? Because at the end of the day, as you said, it is about business as well. And perhaps there is a creative solution that we haven't come up with yet. Fingers crossed.
Maybe. Although I've got to say, it's a conundrum.
It is.
You know what I mean? It's not an easy one. But yeah, I know, I agree with you. We must keep searching for that, you know.
Yeah.
I think that the shame now is there's not a lot you can with the advent of the internet and so on, and file sharing and streaming. It's hard for a musician now to monetize that, really, except in a small way. You know, you could maybe get £10 for 12 tracks or something, without a physical product of some sort, it's the physicality of the live performance or the physical record. That's the way that musicians always used to traditionally, well, it's how all businesses work, really. Mm. You know, selling something that's a physical thing. Something isn't physical anymore and it can just be copied at no cost, that's the conundrum of it. It's very difficult, you know. Mm. Hard to see a way through. But as I keep saying, I do think it will get better. Just going to take some time, you know.
Yeah, it will. And as you say, in the old days, it was so different, wasn't it? It was all about the product and people buying their, you know, the singles and the albums in vinyl, then it's CD. And that, I think that was when the end of the sort of like the money train in that respect ended, didn't it? And the switch came to live performances. But if now you can't do either, it's like, well, there must be a solution somehow. Perhaps it's about the physical product again. Would people pay for that? I don't know.
I think it to some extent it is. I mean, we know record sales have gone down, but I think you're right. It is about selling the physical product. But the challenge for musicians now is to find your market. You know, before in the good old bad old days when record companies were the gatekeepers, they would find the market for you because they had big budgets. They would off the acts that did make it big, the record company could then finance advertising for new acts and so on. So they would find the market. They would put the record into the distributors, you know, into the retailer shops. And so it was done that way. Now, because we don't have that structure anymore of the record company, it's down to the artist now, I think, to find their market. And that, again, is a bit of a challenge. From what I can see, I mean, I think the only way really is through social marketing, Facebook and Pinterest and these sort of things, to try and find your own market. But that's the challenge for musicians ahead, I think.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
And different kind of challenges, aren't they now? I mean, like you said there about the good old bad old days of the music business, bigger proper business where record labels did all that kind of work for you. But I mean, looking at Badfinger, are very renowned for the, you know, being a victim of some of the difficulties of that industry.
I
mean, there's good and bad, isn't there, when you think about it from that perspective? You know, and you're not the only person I've spoken to about this.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't defend the system as it was before. It was an awful system because essentially, you could get ripped off terribly, and many, many bands did. Many bands, you know, didn't really get their just desserts or were on very low royalty rates. But nevertheless, the advantage, that was the con of the downside of that system. But the plus side was that there was a structure, even if it wasn't a good structure, there was a structure. Now there's kind of no structure and it's left to the musician to produce your own. You've got to kind of make your own records, finance that. You're expected really to make your own video.
Yeah.
To go with that, you're expected to, network and do all the Facebook thing, which takes a considerable amount of time if you're going to do it with any, you know, real effectiveness.
Yeah.
So it's, the business has changed out of all sort of recognition. Mm. But I think that's where the future lies for me, I think, and most musicians, is to re-sort of find, you know, your fans and sort of work one-to-one almost on a one-to-one basis with fans.
Yeah.
And build that up, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the good thing from a, you know, as you say, the fan perspective. They're able to actually get more access, aren't they, than they ever used to be. You know, in the good, bad old days, as we've been saying there, the bands were very untouchable, weren't they? Whereas social media and that activity of going online, I think has opened them up a bit more, hasn't it? Which is lovely from a fan perspective, let's be honest.
Definitely. It's in that case, I mean, it's better for fans because, as you say, rock stars or film stars or anyone like that. They were the people that they had the house on the hill, you know.
Yes.
They were distant people who you knew very little about, you know, and so on. But now, with the advent of social media, yeah, fans can get in touch one-to-one. I mean, isn't that, from a fan's perspective, isn't that wonderful,
isn't
you know?
Yeah.
You can all contact almost anyone, in a way. So I think that's a great thing. And it's a thing that the musician can use to their advantage, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it was difficult before. If a fan wanted to get in touch, they'd probably write to the record company.
Yeah.
And then the record company would probably pass the letter on, maybe. You know, but now we're all open to each other. So that actually is a fantastic advantage of the system now.
Yeah, it's far more social in every single way, isn't it, really?
So yeah, yeah.
It gives you the opportunity to be able to talk to fans direct, doesn't it? And then and be yourself and say your message without it being watered down or changed by anybody in between.
Yes, that's right. Mm. That's right.
So that
is better, you know.
Yeah, so, but you're still doing, you know, some creative work despite all these challenges that you've got going on. You know, this is the good thing.
Yeah.
You're still out there creating, even if you can't perform the music yet. You've just got your new stuff going out, haven't you? You've got a new release in a different world, which I've listened to. It's absolutely lovely. It's lovely. I mean, did you decide purposely to try and continue that Badfinger feel, or did you want to move away? I've got my own views on this. I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were when you came up with that. Were you trying to sort of, you know, continue the legacy, or, you know, move away a little bit?
Not really move away. I mean, it's quite, Badfinger had a profound effect on me when I joined. Back in 74, whenever it was. And it really, before then, I was kind of playing more of a sort of blues, jazz kind of thing in bands, and some progressive stuff before then. But what Badfinger did for me was it really kind of underlined that simplicity, maybe, is the way that you connect with people. It isn't sort of showing you the fastest gun in the West on the keyboard, or,
no.
You know, it's really about, to connect with people, it's about, you know, doing that thing in an effective way, and that it wasn't sort of shameful to write a song with just three chords in it, you know,
yeah.
That, you know what I mean? Which
I
is,
do.
Which is in a sense the opposite thing to wanting to flaunt your technique and say, hey, look at me, you know, I'm a great player, look at this, you know. So that affected me greatly. So in terms of right now, up to date now with that new track and other stuff I'm doing, I always aim now at the song. The song for me is king, you know, and everything should serve the song. So I'm trying to write stuff that... I'm trying to write stuff. I do write stuff.
That's very humble of you there, actually. You are achieving it, Bob. Believe me, you are achieving it.
thanks for that, Kat. I needed that. So I'm writing stuff, really, that is, you know, I'm aiming at good songs, really. So whether they're ballads or they're rockers or whatever, it's the good song thing I'm after. And songs that kind of mean something rather than just Moon and June, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know quite how to answer that question fully. I mean, I think it's natural for me to be writing and playing in that style.
Yeah. I'll tell you what it felt like to me. It felt like a lovely encompassment of, you know, what Badfinger stood for, you know, at its height when it had the huge success. But it also then brought in elements for me of, there was the Beatles a little bit in there, and also bit of Bowie in there as well for me. A little bit different. And I know that Badfinger were actually hailed as the new Beatles, so I'm not surprised at that bit. But are you surprised to hear the, you know, the observation about Bowie?
Well, not really, because I was a big fan, or am a big fan of Bowie. And again, I'll tell you why I'm a fan. It's the songs.
Mm.
You know, it's not so much that, you know, I think he's a fantastic musician or this, that. It's the song, the creation of the song. And some of Bowie's songs were fantastic. Well, many of them were fantastic, but in particular things like, you know, Oh, You Pretty Thing, and... There's some, you know, all the young dudes, you know, these are classic songs. So I think there is a connection between that material and Badfinger and the Beatles and what I'm, you know, doing.
Yeah.
I think there is a sort of harmony there between all those songs. So, yeah, well, thanks for that. I appreciate that.
It's my pleasure.
but I'm not fully surprised, though, because, as I said, you know, he was an influence as well.
Yeah.
And I think most musicians, you know, start off by trying to emulate the people they like. And, you know, no one's an island. I mean, we all start off by emulating our heroes or something. But as time goes by, of course, you encompass so many influences from so many places.
Yeah.
And you bring something of yourself to it as well, in a sense, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll let the listeners decide, because we will play it, so they can decide what they think about it.
Excellent. Hi, this is Bob Jackson from Badfinger, and you're listening to Cat Tales, the track In a Different World.
Absolutely.
My protest song.
Yes, your protest song, which is excellent.
It's not a fashionable thing, but I thought I'd do one. So if you listen to the lyric, I think it's quite apt at the moment.
So was it inspired? Was it inspired by the current situation, was it? You thought just, or was it just coincidental that it's all come about at the same time?
Well, it's coincidental. I mean, I wrote that song a few years ago, so it wasn't inspired by that. But it's, you know, the lyric is all about, you know, the coming together of people and trying to be kinder rather than, you know, rather than the politics of hate approach, you know, I don't, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, I wrote it a while ago, but I don't think there's been, you know, better time to talk about all these things, really.
Yeah. So what other influences, if you've got the Beatles in there and you've got Bowie, who else on the scene as a young Bob, when you were looking at the music industry, who was it the one that really inspired you to go into this, what's turned out to be quite a treacherous business? And you're probably saying, don't give up the day job, you know, but actually this is your day job. So,
well, and who could have guessed it? I mean, I can remember saying to my mum when I was about 20 or something like that, you know, gosh, you know, I hope they get some success quick, because I mean, you can't go on after you're about 25 or 6, can you? And that really was genuinely my mindset at the time. And who could it? Of course, you know, it was the Wild West, and the map hadn't been drawn, so no one really knew. But that was my perception, that I'd only carry on for a few years.
Yeah,
I could never have imagined I'd have been playing for so long. But one artist, I liked all the song-based artists, not unsurprisingly, I suppose, the Kinks, you know, the Who, Bowie, of course, we mentioned. On top of it all, of course, the Beatles, because they were at the forefront of establishing that, you know, a great song, and of course, a song written by themselves, created by themselves, rather than some Tin Pan Alley, you know, kind of guy who just kind of came in, who wasn't really a player or a, you know, just the commercial sort of end of it, you know. The Beatles created that template.
Yeah.
So, of course, they were the biggest influence of all for me.
Yeah, sure. I can understand that. I mean, it must have felt like a dream come true then when you ended up on their Apple Records label.
Well, yeah, it did. It did. It was like Local Boy Made Good. You know, I couldn't quite believe it. I mean, it was unreal.
Yeah,
it was unreal to me. And I never sort of, you know, even though I'd kind of jumped into that, and it was a surprise, as I say, it was a surprise, and I've never taken it for granted, if you know what I mean. I've always thought I'm lucky to be where I am, wherever it's been in the business. Because it's such a, as you said then before, it can be such a treacherous business.
Yeah.
Perhaps less now. I think the artist is more in control than the managers, the agents, and the record companies were in control of you. And of course, you signed contracts to that effect. I mean, there was no way out of it once you'd signed.
Yeah, I mean, that was the danger, I think, wasn't it? I suppose a lot of people go into these contracts in those days quite naively. You see the lights thinking, this is our break. It doesn't matter. We'll accept what they say now and then we'll revisit. But there's actually no opportunity to revisit, is there, once the ball starts to roll for you?
That's right. That's how it was. I mean, just you know, I would say 99% of musicians in the 60s, 70s were completely naive as to the way business worked.
Yeah.
And the business end took advantage of that, of course they did. I think now it's, again, that's a sort of plus of today's scene, that people are more aware. You know, my generation made all the mistakes, and I think people have learned from that, you know.
Yeah, which is a good thing, isn't it, really?
It's a wonderful thing, yeah.
Well, the tragic thing in Badfinger, obviously, were the suicides, and I don't think that was a unique situation in those days, was it, unfortunately? I mean, I think the unfortunate thing for Badfinger was that there was two, and there was lots of, you know, legal things around that, wasn't there? But, you know, I think a few other people went down that route as well, didn't they, sadly?
Yes, quite possibly. At the time, of course, I was so wrapped up in that, you know, I didn't really realise what was happening to, you know, other people in the business. But yes, of course, you know, yes, it affected, yes, you know, that. And again, we're back to the mental health thing, aren't we?
Yes,
in a sense that people got so despondent that they couldn't move forward, that yes, they would kind of sadly they would take their own lives. And
yeah,
awful, isn't it? It's terrible.
It is. It's quite shameful, isn't it? Really, that the industry could actually put people in that position. And you know, and in those days there wasn't that awareness of mental health either. You know, that we have today.
Yeah.
We've talked about. So it's a bit of a recipe for a disaster for quite a few people. I feel very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah, it was then. And of course, Badfinger, you know, as you mentioned, the most tragic of all, in the sense that not one but two people were so down, depressed, and couldn't find a way forward, you know.
Yeah.
So that was heartbreaking. It was awful at the time.
Very, yeah. It must have been, Bob. How awful. But, you know, looking back, do you think then, actually, in a way, it's good now to be, you know, continuing that legacy with Badfinger. In a way, you're still flying the flag for them, aren't you?
Oh, definitely, because I think the band had some of the best, you know, the best catalogue of songs, you know, that were produced by bands, you know, along with people like, of course, like the Kinks and the Beatles and whoever else, of course. But the band had a great catalogue of songs, and I think, yeah, it was a shame. So yeah, I've got a great, as you might imagine, I've got a great emotional connection to the whole Badfinger story, you know, as well as the material. So yeah, it means a lot to me. Still means a lot to me.
Excellent. Well, it's bound to, isn't it? It's part of your life. It's a massive part of your life. But you've actually been in the business, you know, the music industry, and you've played with other bands as well. You know, mentioned the Fortunes there, didn't you, at the start of our conversation? So, you know, but it hasn't all just been Badfinger. What other things have you been getting up to?
Okay, well, a quick sort of, what, you know, one liner on each. Okay,
yeah.
I'm a Coventry lad, and I started in local bands in Coventry. I was self-taught, like many the contemporary artists today. I didn't have any training. There was just a piano in the front room, and I used to plink and plonk on it with one finger.
Excellent.
And you know, it was. I found it so rewarding. I'd have little breakthroughs. You know, play two notes together, and it was like harmonised. And I'd think, gosh, that sounds interesting. And I literally picked it up like that. And of course, listening. Of course, there was the big cultural music revolution the Beatles were part of, and it really, yeah, I mean, I was fascinated.
Wow.
I was overtaken by it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I came up, just as I say, plonking around on a piano in the front room. I got a first deal was with formed a band called Indian Summer.
Yeah.
And we started doing gigs. We're on the same circuit as Black Sabbath. We got to know those guys well.
Brilliant.
In fact, they were called Earth at the time when I knew them. They weren't in Black Sabbath.
Oh wow!
That's
the early days.
Yeah, and we were managed by the same people.
Brilliant.
And we got a deal, and we had their producer and so on and so forth. So we got our first deal on Neon Records, I think it was. Was it Neon? Yeah, I think so.
Right.
With Indian Summer. A progressive kind of band.
Yeah.
And we did an album with that. Then, what did I do next? Yeah, I joined a band called Ross.
Yeah.
Which was a band managed by the Robert Stigwood Organisation, that of course handled people like the Bee Gees and Clapton and so on.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And this would have been 72 or 73, I think. So yeah, they got us on a Clapton tour. We supported Clapton in America.
Wonderful.
In 74. Yeah, you know, doing the Clapton's comeback tour when he was just getting over the drug thing.
Wow.
And again, that was so magical to me. It was like, wow, here I am, flying on. I think we flew on Elvis's plane with Clapton to this gig and that gig, and they hired the plane. And they were big places. I mean, Madison Square Gardens and,
all,
you know, all these, the best level you could be at. Anyway, so I did a couple of albums with that band. And then I got a call. I left the band. I came back to England because we just finished an album in the States. Came back. And then I got a telegram. See how old I am?
A telegram
saying, "Would you know, are you busy? Would you consider auditioning for this band? And I went down and found it was Badfinger. The telegram didn't say it was Badfinger.
Oh, didn't somehow, it?
Oh. So I just went down to, I've forgotten the name of the street, Denmark Street.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know, one of the most sort of famous Tin Pan Alley.
Yes, yeah.
And the streets in the music business. And I went in, it's Badfinger.
Crikey.
So I jammed around a bit, got the job. I was very pleased about that.
I bet.
We did a British tour. Along with the Man Band, a name from the past there.
It is.
They were a great band, a Welsh band. Then we went into Apple, did an album. And of course the tragedy struck there. Then the bass player from Badfinger, Tommy Evans and myself, we formed a band called the Dodgers. We had some albums on Island Records.
Wow.
Then I did some various sort of, you know, session stuff. I played with the Searchers on an album.
Brilliant.
A band called Moon, I can remember an album. I started working a bit with Pete Brown, the guy who co-wrote The Poet, you know, co-wrote a lot of the Cream stuff.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Like White Room and,
yeah,
and, you know, Sunshine of Your Love.
Wonderful.
I did some stuff with him. He got me a session. It was me, Jack Bruce, Jeff Beck.
Wow.
I was really thinking, wow, this is, it was like a dream, you know, going through all this stuff. Anyway, then I rejoined Badfinger. Tommy and I reformed it again, and we did a few American tours. Then I went on to the Fortunes and spent many, many years with the Fortunes. When one of the Fortunes got ill, couldn't carry on, and I was living locally. I was in Coventry, and so were they. And I'd known them anyway for years, you know, but I took over from there. And that wasn't such a jump in a way, because it was harmony and good songs again, you know.
Yeah.
So
it seems
that
to be the theme, doesn't it, here? The good songs seem to be the theme through the whole thing, which is, you know, let's be honest, that's exactly what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all kinds of other things, but I suppose generally those, and then from the Fortunes, of course, I started in the last few years before my health issues doing Badfinger again and trying to re-establish that material as well as being in the Fortunes. I was doing it at the same time. You know?
Oh, crikey, that's a bit of a handful.
Yeah, that was tough. That was, you can imagine.
Let's not take the easy route here, Bob.
trying to get your diary together to get two bands and that was difficult. But I did it, you know, for a couple of years, 2-3 years like that. And then unhappily, of course, as I said, unhappily the virus came along and that's locked us all down for the last year. It's a potted history there.
Which is amazing. I mean, it's a nice, rich potted history of absolutely wonderful experiences, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been a great career. There's plenty more to go. So we just need to get this COVID thing sorted and, you know, Badfinger back out on the road for you.
That's the plan. You know, when... As you indicate, when circumstances allow, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess most bands are in this position now.
Absolutely.
I mean, certainly everyone I speak to, all my musician friends, they're all, you know, they can't wait to get started again.
Yeah, I know. And who knows, something good may just come round the corner. I mean, I was just thinking there about things coming round the corner, and I missed it completely. I'm thinking here, Breaking Bad. I watched Breaking Bad, and of course I saw the whole series, and there was Baby Blue on the last episode, I think, or something, wasn't it?
I know.
Amazing.
I know, that's something that I bragged about on stage. You know, when we would do that number, I would say, this number, although it was a hit years before, the producer really liked the song Breaking Bad, and really liked, and he put in the last 3 minutes of the final season. I mean, what a fantastic thing that was. And, you know, that really boosted the thing. It started selling then, you know, as downloads rather than records, but it started selling again, and it got into the top 10 again in America.
Oh, amazing. That's brilliant, isn't
it? Yeah, in the download chart.
Wow. Well,
so that was a lovely thing.
Brought you
and
to
that shows,
audience.
Doesn't it, the strength of the songs, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even years later, a song like that could be picked up. Great. It's a great teamwork. Pete Pete Hans tunes. Yeah, great. Really
yeah,
good.
You're absolutely right. It has still has relevance today, and that's why, you know, people are just, you know, waiting to hear the music again when you go back out on the road, which hopefully won't be long. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been an absolute delight. I'm so pleased to have finally got to speak to you, because we've been trying to line it up, haven't we, for a while? And
I know we have. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, it's gone on and on.
No, not at all.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. We're here now. Yeah. That's the main thing.
let's just hope, as you say, that people find with a bit of sideways lateral thinking a way, you know, that musicians can kind of exist again, as opposed to just being part-time and amateur, yeah. That they can find a way to make a living from their art. I mean, I think it's important for the world, you know, that art is continually created. So let's just keep our fingers crossed for that, eh?
Where there's a will, there's a way, Bob. It will happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, stay positive. That's
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks ever so much, Kat. I appreciate it.
No, thank you very much, Bob. And we'll definitely speak again soon. All right.
Okay.
You take care. All right.
Yeah, and you. And
all
you.
The best. Yeah, speak soon. Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Cat Tales.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.